morning, Morris.
Good morning, Karen.
I am so curious about this topic. Obviously, with all the changes in the car industry, a lot of people are thinking about jobs for the future and maybe thinking about advising their kids. But I actually had a conversation with my brother recently. He's a journalist. He's also with the ABC. And he said that he wouldn't recommend anyone go into media. Do you think he's overreacting to sort of the current state of the industry, or do we just need to change the way we're thinking about what we're doing? So I've got a couple of questions for you this morning, Morris.
So firstly, I think he is overreacting, which is absolutely normal, because as human beings, that's what we do. We get so used to something in a particular manner that when that particular style or manner disappears, we think that the whole world
It's over.
But it's not. I mean, at the core of what he does and what you do and what I do, we are communicators. And human beings have always communicated, even before we had language, even before we knew physical words and
we were able to write.
We'd still
be tapping each other on the shoulder and throwing rocks at each other.
And we were drawing on cave walls and we were sending arrows with messages. I mean, really, we go through history with a litany of being able to speak to each other. What he's absolutely right about and what we're reacting to is that the ways that we communicate in the past have disappeared. Newspapers had a 200-300 year run, and in the last 100 years have become really important. Television's been on for about 60 or 70 years and become important. All those things were relevant in our lives, but at the core of them, they were communication. Moving forward, we're still going to want to talk to each other, but we're going to do it in lots of different ways, and mostly in a whole lot of new digital spaces that we've never thought of, never even contemplated we could have before.
I know when I first left commercial radio, everyone said you should podcast, and I love the concept, but have an internet radio station, but I was kind of overwhelmed with the idea of grasping all that new technology.
You're right, and podcasting is one way. Really what that means is creating your own content, finding an audience for it, and bringing that audience to that space, that digital space, to hear you. But again, that's one of the myriads of ways that we communicate. I actually think now in the last 10 years, and this is a conversation only of the last decade, that we are in fact communicating more than we ever have before.
We're on Facebook, we're on all these different social mediums, we take our phones with us. Everywhere we go, we're contactable in multiple ways at any time of the day or night.
Absolutely. Now, a lot of that, I must say, is drivel. Yeah? A lot of what we're saying is just too much. I mean, just too much. But we're kind of kids in a candy store at the moment, meaning that we have, as you've said rightly, all these ways that we can talk, so all of a sudden we're just telling everybody everything. What you're finding is with the early adopters, the people who've been in there for a while, they're actually pulling back now. They're saying, look, I know I can do all of that. I don't have to prove it anymore. I'm really only going to have sensible conversations with people that I want to speak to and that I want to hear from. And we're getting a bit more circumspect with the way that we're doing that. I know it doesn't feel like that for everybody, but I promise that's the road that we're on. Give us another year or two and we'll all say, well, that's enough. Let's just say what we need to say.
I can almost feel the audience breathing a collective sigh of relief, because it does get a little bit too much, the expectations that you've got to instantly respond. And it's certainly difficult when you are face-to-face with someone and they're addicted to their phone. And I've just got to answer this as if it's all urgent.
Now, for me, the conversation comes back to humans, not technology, because technology by itself is benign. It's we humans that have changed the way that we interact with the technology now. We've given it such an important status that as soon as that damn thing rings or chimes or vibrates,
it's like an alarm going off. We're like Pavlov's dog, and we've got to respond instantly. I like the idea that we're likely to, in your predictive sense, which is what you do for a living, so you're obviously good at it, become more circumspect and think, I can deal with the funny cat photo that someone sent me on Facebook that's gone ding on my phone, or a photo of their dinner that I really didn't want to see. I can deal with that later and be selective about how I utilise the technology.
Yeah, I would say not only deal with it later, but perhaps never deal with it. I mean, just get over the fact that if in your life you haven't seen that cat fall down the stairs, really life can continue quite happily. And that's what we were all scared of, I think. You know, just missing out.
I'm going to miss something. Yeah.
But we've always missed stuff in life because we never had access to it. Let's just get back to that point of sensible communication. We have great tools, great technology that can help us to do that. As human beings, we just have to take a deep collective sigh and say, enough already. Let me be a bit more selective about it. Let's move forward on that road. And we're seeing things like digital detox and digital Sabbaths. becoming quite trendy.
Which
are people who say, one day a week, one day a month, just even the thought is enough. I'm not going to let technology take my life over. I'm going to take that deep breath, perhaps a full physical day or perhaps just a moment, and not let it do what it needs to do. I love technology, but we have to be the master of it. It doesn't matter what period of time we're in, what phase of time, which century, we always need to be the master of it.
Brings me to the next thing that's on my mind, which is, of course, not what I've rung you about, but I can't resist anyway now that I've got you here. Technology and business, like I, as a speaker and author, got instead of, you know, ringing someone and saying, hey, can I, you know, get paid to talk at your event or whatever, suddenly there's this massive wave. I'm being bombarded with free content left, right and centre. How do you actually build a career for yourself as a creative person, as someone who is a creative and or in the arts or a communicator, where you're not having to, we're getting, do you know what I mean? I'm waffling now.
No, I absolutely do. Now, I'm also a professional speaker. I've been on the circuit for many years, do conferences. It almost sounds like a plug, which on ABC we're not allowed to do. But my answer to that is this. Again, we have so much information bombarding us. You know, 80% of the world's so-called data has gone up online in only the last 2 years. 80% of our data.
So it's not unusual for me to feel completely overwhelmed and like I can't possibly compete in this environment. I can't get my message out without spending a fortune on someone who knows far more than me about how to build the website and how to get the message and how to cut through and how to SEO and.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the way that most people feel nowadays. Now, we need to take this sensibly again. What we're talking about is being drowned in what I call data. It's zeros and ones, bits and pieces of people's thoughts and recollections and what they think is best. But data is generic. It's generic because it really means nothing to me unless I can make sense of it. So as a speaker, as a writer, as a blogger, as a communicator, as somebody that works in business that has to make a living out of doing something a bit better than just data, I talk about data as being the bottom rung. Mm-hmm. I talk about knowledge as being the middle rung. And for most of us that make a living by speaking or by informing, I talk about wisdom as being the top rung.
Mm.
And wisdom is what people are thirsting for. They're dying for it. To overplay that word, because what we want is somebody to say, look, all that stuff that you're drowning in really isn't necessary. These are the 3, 4, 5 things that you need to be aware of. This is how it pertains to you. This is how it becomes sensible and useful for you. Please just do this. Disregard everything else. I've sifted through that. It's not of use to you.
Yes, and because I'm seeing one of the things I'm noticing in any form of business and marketing is that people are getting hold of models, marketing themselves, and then underneath it, there's not much substance, there's not much wisdom, so they might be getting that sort of peak or appearing to be successful. It's all about perception, but the reality under the perception is there's negligible information there.
Welcome to the Wizard of Oz. I mean, really, to me, that's what it is. You know, behind the curtain, there is this man who is just making some machines go around. It sounds very grand from the front and looks very grand. But I would absolutely agree, and we need to be, again, more careful about that nowadays, because there is transparency. It's so easy to find access to this data. It's so easy to find access to experts and to other people. Not for a moment do I think that they're not wise. I'm not saying that about anybody. But we need to use that ready access also to make sure, as you've said, that these people actually know what they're talking about. And wisdom is particular. It's particular to you and I. If it makes sense to you, if it feels right, if it has some substance to it, then perhaps that's what we need to go with.
Mm-hmm. And then learning how to cut through all that just the white noise that's out there of all this marketing and the tons and tons of digital stuff to actually get our message out is the challenge.
Absolutely. And again, human nature, it's the angst that causes most of us problem. It's not the fact that we might know that these 2 or 3 things are the answer. It's what we might be missing out on by paying no attention to those things over there that we've become aware of just now. And my work, when I look at anything and try to work out whether it's a future trend or a possibility, I work from an anthropological basis. So where does humankind think about this? How does humankind approach this? Is this going to be purposeful and useful in our lives? And we need to do the same, I think, when we judge anything. Just don't try not to be overwhelmed by all this stuff that we have now. And having it's great, because choice is a wonderful thing in a human life. But we need to become a bit better at sifting through that and finding the importance.
Mm, well, they're saying the great experts, the generic they are saying that actually too much choice is at the bottom of a lot of depression. We're overwhelmed with choice. The simplicity of get up, put your clothes on, what's the weather like, I can wear this today, I only have three items to choose from, is become a really complex thing for people, just getting out of bed and choosing what to do with their day.
Again, to me, that comes back to the angst. It comes back to people wanting everything. Again, a human nature flaw that we have. I think we need to be, as we have been in the past, perhaps a bit more comfortable with having a little bit less, knowing a little bit less, but making sure that what we have and what we know is relevant to us. Great example, I was driving with some friends the other week. I mean, me, the futurist who loves technology, has all the toys that are possible on the planet. And my friend, he was driving, I was in the back seat. My friend says to me, have you got your app out? Can you see what the traffic is ahead? So I literally pulled over, pointed out the front and said to him, well, there's two cars in front of us. That's about as far as we need to know.
Lovely.
And it's this thing about being more, wanting more, wanting to know what was a kilometre, 2 kilometres ahead, which might make sense, but just look out the window, drive.
Beautiful. I love that. I love that as a metaphor for everything we've been talking about. Now, to the matter at hand, the thing I haven't asked you about, which I guess is the hot topic at the moment, with Toyota announcing their closure and manufacturing coming to an end in Australia. And, of course, we've seen other big manufacturers go down. The Canning SPC mob have had some sort of government rescue. Not quite sure why when they're owned by Coca-Cola, but that's just my personal opinion. I'll have to edit that out. You'd think Coke would, chuck a bit of money that way, but that's another matter. With the changes that we're seeing in some of the more traditional industries, what are you seeing as areas that people who are preparing for life, kids, teenagers, young adults, looking ahead, and of course, even for the rest of us that are a little more mature, we're now seeing people having two or three different big waves of career choices, people making massive tree changes and sea changes in a career sense in their lives. What are the industries that you think people are going to actually be able to make a good living out of over the coming decades?
There are lots of them. Firstly, to round up the comment that you made, which is absolutely right, the Australian Bureau of Statistics tells us that today's kids, they're kids that are going into grade one, that will come out of the education system somewhere around 2025 and enter the career force somewhere between 2025 and 2030. They'll have 6 careers and 14 jobs.
Wow.
They'll live till they're 120, I'd say about 150, and they'll work well into their 80s. When you put that framework behind the kids of tomorrow, they're going to live, work, play, and recreate in a space that I could never envision. I mean, even with Disneyland, I couldn't envision such a life for them. Their work will not be 9 to 5, I don't think. It won't be Monday to Friday. We're not taking 4-day weekends. That was always a nonsense. All that paperless office 4-day weekend stuff was just science fiction. But what they will do is work project and task. I think they'll work in more of a consultative model. They will definitely be more responsible for their own careers and for their own progressions. Lots of them will be working in careers that you and I now know. We know, for instance, healthcare, anything around the healthcare industry for the next 10, 20 years is just going to boom. We have a whole lot of baby boomers like me who are going to pay their way to an indecently good old age if we can and be willing to do that. We have retail, which I know has gone through a huge change, and it seemed a strange thing to say.
But it's not dead?
Human beings have always traded. We've always not had what we needed and been willing to share something we do have or trade something we do have with somebody else. It was called bartering back in the old days. We're always going to have to interact in that space. So retailing, in a myriad of ways, many of which we don't yet like or have, will definitely still be career choices. And we're also, of course, going to have to construct houses and buildings and shops and offices and all, and schools and all kinds of things. So many of the industries we have now are still going to be great industries.
But they're going to look different.
They will look different. The tasks that we have will be different. The way that they operate will be different. We might need more or less people in them. But as core industries, again, human traits tells me that we're going to need these things in our lives. So let's firstly put that into the context of some of the things, many of the things we have now will still move along. Now, if you're of my vintage, for instance, think back to the days when the job ads, and this was in the 80s and 90s, were for typists.
Yes.
How many jobs for typists do we have now? Because it's become a task of everybody's role. I lament the people that couldn't put food on table, had real angst in their lives because they couldn't find a job as a typist. I don't wish that on anybody. But we've evolved on from that time. And that's really what we're going to see. That's what we see in manufacturing now. Again, I don't wish it for anybody. I wish that they would all have full employment, that their lives would have everything they want. But we're structurally changing the world. We're going through an industrial revolution. And we have bolted on the equivalent of a digital world that we've never had before in the last 10 years.
So as a futurist, if you're talking to a parent who, say, has a 13, 14-year-old at school thinking about the subjects they're going to choose that are going to take them right through to year 12 and possibly on into a tertiary education, where would you recommend, I mean, apart from the obvious, which I think you'd agree with me, which is follow your passions, follow the things that you're good at, follow the things that inspire you and interest you, but where would you be recommending they focus themselves as far as employment?
Sure. So you're absolutely right. Again, it's a compass. All that stuff is a compass because it leads you in a particular direction with a particular skill set. We as parents need to be aware, as I've said before, 6 careers, 14 jobs, their world is different. Stop telling them not to use the computer. Stop telling them not to use the internet. It doesn't make sense because to them it's like oxygen. You know, I have parents, I do parents groups all the time. One of the things I always ask parent groups is how many of you want to let your children have a career playing games? And very rarely does a parent put their hand up. I then tell them that one of the largest growing industries at the moment is the gaming industry. The gaming industry at the moment is employing people with moderate skills, somewhere around the 80,000K plus.
Wow.
In America. I'm not talking about playing games. I'm talking about being able to design them, being able to develop them, being able to market them.
I'm going to have to go, Morris. I'm going to have to go right now. I'm going to have to go buy myself a ticket, go to the States with my moderate skills and get myself a job.
Well, I think so. But again, let's put that into a context. I'm not just talking about kids' games. I'm talking about this field called gamification, where we are able now to teach people skills, traits, new habits by putting them into a virtual environment that doesn't put them in harm's way, but lets them use these new skills, develop these new skills, and then become useful in a workforce.
So it's not, often we more mature people think about gaming as an industry as time wasting.
It's absolutely not. Pilots have been learning in a gamified experience for the last three decades.
Yeah.
Astronauts. When you think about it, even our medical profession now uses digital cadavers to be able to teach new students about the human body and how to interact and where the parts are. So when we think about these things, we really need to put on a new vision of not just saying, well, in my day it was, and therefore that's what it's going to be. So gaming's a great one. Or, again, anything around health. At the moment, another trending job is called a data scientist. In the States, difficult to find this person, no qualification around she or he yet, but will be. Lots of universities are working on it. And a data scientist, again, is somebody who's commanding about $100,000 upwards, being sought by everybody, including Google and Apple and Microsoft and all the large corps across the planet. And that's somebody who knows that online, we've spent 30 years shoving a whole lot of information into that space and not making really good sense out of it. This is somebody who can say, well, I can make good sense out of that. I can mine through all that data we talked about before, and I can turn it into knowledge and wisdom so that your business knows exactly who your customers are and what they want and where they are, so that the medical profession knows exactly what it is it needs to know. That's a data scientist, one of those new jobs.
Wow. And as far as languages go, there's one of the things I heard right back in the 80s when I was still a teenager was that the next global world force would be China, and we should all be learning to speak, you know, Mandarin or Cantonese, that we're close to Indonesia, we should all have an Indonesian language. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say language is not important anymore, because what we have now is the ability to translate. We will have the ability over the next 10 years for sure, 20 years easily, for all words to be known by everybody, regardless of whether that's your native tongue or you've seen it before. You can get something as simple and as free as Google Translate.
Translate a message on your Facebook.
Absolutely. Now, I know it's clumsy, and I know it's not perfect, and it misses out on idiosyncrasies, but we're talking about something that's going to evolve. It hasn't just stopped at this point. And if you think back to what they were 5 or 10 years ago, so I think language is important. I mean, it obviously is. It pervades the culture of a society. It does all kinds of important things. But the notion of having to know another language in order to be able to progress, I think is going to disappear over the next few decades because there is transparency. Kids of today don't see geography in the way we did as being a boundary or a limiting factor. There are lots of things that open to them, and language, I think, will be one of the few that will really just go by the wayside in the way of not stymieing them to move forward.
Morris, I could talk to you all day. You're just absolutely...